Blog Talk Radio.
Investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime to find answers and seek justice. The Crime Wire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Tom Shamshak, retired chief of police and private investigator, Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on top of the crime at the top of their game. Crime Wire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can go in and participate in tonight's show simply by going to our live interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member and you'd like to send the Crime Wire team information on an unsolved or suspicious death to be considered for a future show segment, please email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
Tonight, our show devotes the entire hour to the families in Oklahoma and their pursuit of justice on behalf of their loved ones, whose suspicious deaths were ruled one after another as suicides by the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's Office. One family, Joe and Donna Turner, would begin their journey on July 12, 2000. Chandra Turner, their only daughter, was shot to death at her home in Paul's Valley on that day. Her boyfriend claimed she shot herself while he slept through the sound of gunfire, then found her outside on the back steps after she was dead. Crime scene photos depict blood throughout the inside of the home, including on the mattress he claimed to have been sleeping on. The mattress had been stripped of sheets. No one asked where they went. There were more signs of cleanup in the bedroom, including a bottle of cleaning solution on the floor. The boyfriend had fresh scratches on his arms, and Chanda was covered in bruises. There were signs of a struggle in the living room, including broken furniture. Despite all these red flags that Chanda did not commit suicide but actually fought for her life, medical examiner investigator John Miller went to the scene and effectively closed the case by classifying the death as a suicide. No pathologist examined Chanda's body at the time. Despite repeated requests, the family was denied an autopsy for almost 10 years. Knowing they would never give up fighting to get justice for their daughter, her parents buried her in a sealed casket inside a sealed crypt to preserve her body for the day when they could finally get an autopsy. They enlisted the legal services of attorney Jay Mendros and created a site called www.justiceforthedead.com. And on May 25, 2011, the governor of Oklahoma signed into law the Chanda Turner Reform Act. And joining us this evening to discuss the case are Joe and Donna Turner. Joe and Donna, welcome to Crime Wire.
You know, we also have Jay Mendros on the air with us as well. So,
and Jay, welcome to Crime Wire. She may be muted, Susan.
Oh, she is. You know what? It's my fault. There she goes. Only because, on this new system, we have to screen, and I didn't unscreen her. So, yeah.
We're taking off the gag order.
Yeah.
Joe, Donna, and Jay, welcome to Crime Wire.
Thank you for inviting us.
You know what I'd like to do? We're going to, throughout the show, work up more into the law and what was in, or the act, the Chanda Turner Reform Act. But I'd like to start out, Joe and Donna, discussing the events of from July of 2000, and because you had a long struggle here. I mean, I can't even comprehend what it would be like. But did either of you at the time, back in July 2000, ever buy into the suicide decision? Were you convinced right off the bat and from day one that this was not a suicide?
Yes, absolutely.
Was.
I knew the minute they came in and told me that something was wrong, but I didn't understand what they were telling me. It was later in the day when they were saying to me, they're saying that, you know, she took her own life. But I knew immediately something's wrong.
And that was then before you even saw all the evidence?
No. Just from what I had been told, yes, and from the information that I had just, you know, in the recent months before Shanda's death, of the situation of that was, you know, going on in the home.
Why don't you go into that, Donna, a little bit, as far as her relationship with the person that she was seeing and living with and what she was
right.
doing?
There were problems. There were problems in the relationship, and she had, you know, been speaking to me about the problems, and she had a very serious concern because 28 days before her death, her boyfriend had shot a man at that residence for really no reason. It was called accidental, but Shanda and the other witness there told me, you know, what they had saw. And so she had a concern any time that a gun was brought out in that home. And so, you know, I knew immediately.
Do you think it had something to do with the fact that the town, you know, that the founding fathers, that there was a political connection somehow? Because if any of us, I think, had
right.
shot off a gun, Joe, and Donna.
Yes, definitely, that played a role in it. And especially when it came to, you know, the night of Shanda's death and the way the investigation was handled and what was done and was not done was definitely influenced by that because, you know, I believe from then and I will believe until the end of my life that had it been anyone else, like you say, you or I, that things would have been done entirely differently.
Because of the political issues there that seem to be looming over because of, you know, anytime you have a street named after a family in a park and
two
house.
Streets.
And,
two streets.
Yeah, I mean, it's two streets. And that what I didn't find out till afterwards was I didn't realize this, that they were the incorporating town fathers of the corporation for Paul's Valley, Oklahoma. And that said a lot.
That's a lot,
and
yes.
And it was only because of a book you gave me that I even knew that
right.
that you had given me a book that had been written on the history of Paul's Valley, and then I started to think about it, and I didn't realize that family they started the town. So there was not justice for your daughter. And we see this in all over the country, but I think in this particular case, though, because it was a small town, they weren't going to investigate it right, and then, you know, with what you found out, if it wasn't your diligence in saying what actually happened, going back step by step and finding out where she was from the convenience store to every step that she took, that's what you did. That's why we're here today, because of what you did.
Right. And, you know, since you were here in October, just last week, I had a person walk into my home wanting to give a statement on information, but while you were here, there were several people that came in with information, and some of them had saw Shanda and spoke to her in the last hours of her life. And it took them a decade to decide, you know, that they felt secure enough to come forward, I guess.
And then, Joe, for you, as a dad, go ahead. I'm sorry, Dan, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask Joe. You and Donna did not accept the suicide ruling. What did you do then when you were not satisfied with that? Can you tell us the steps you went through? Who you contacted? What you did? And what the results were and that type of thing?
Well, Denny, the moment I seen Shanda's body with bruises all over it, I went to, you know, asking, you know, saying this is not right. Asking what happened here? What happened to that? The moment that we started asking questions where these bruises came from, we became the enemy. I mean, instantly. So before we called John Miller back to the funeral home, and for him to view Shanda's bruises and stuff again, and he walks out on the front steps of the funeral home and tells me, says, Joe, I don't deny she was in a fight, but it had nothing to do with her death. And he
what makes
not
you
do
take pictures?
What
gives
we was
you the
wanting
idea?
Was an autopsy, and they would not do it.
What gives you the idea to take photos? I think that's very unique. We don't
because
see that with families, especially when this time happens.
Because we fully intended, Susan, we opened the casket up and showed lots of people.
Right.
We chose people in the community, and we showed people that these bruises
on
Janet's body.
At the funeral
we know
home
this
after,
is not right.
After
and we did not want
together.
People saying this is just a family that won't accept the truth. We wanted the public to know. So we took photographs, and we started getting everything that the Garland County Sheriff's Department would give us. I mean, every time we heard that they had a statement from someone, I run over and I got it. And then, I mean, we knowed it wasn't right, and we wasn't accepting it. We didn't know what to do about it, but over the years, we've kind of figured it out.
But I think, Denny, too, there's something here that they do that's very interesting, is they preserve the body in a certain way, and for law enforcement or to have another autopsy, that plays a key role, doesn't it?
It certainly did. And how did you know to do that? Or did you consult with someone, or did you just know that you needed to preserve your daughter's body like that? Or how did that come about?
Well, no, it was God's will that we did it. I mean, we didn't know. You know, when something like it happens, Denny, you don't know. It's God. God made us do it. But, you know, when you lose your daughter, you're going to want to put her in the best casket that you can buy her in, the best vault. I mean, we fully intended to have her body exhumed a lot quicker than we did. But
yeah, guys,
we couldn't, they wouldn't give us a court order to do it.
We tried three times and were denied up until 2009. We tried.
Who were you denied by, Donna?
We were denied by the medical examiner's office and by the sheriff's department.
Right.
And it's interesting because the sheriff's department originally blamed the medical examiner, saying they don't want an autopsy. And John Miller was saying that he tried to convince them for an autopsy, and the sheriff's department was saying that it wasn't necessary.
So you had everybody pointing fingers at everybody.
At the other one,
right.
And this is a small town. So
right.
Denny, does it matter whether it's a small town or a big town? This all happens the same way, doesn't it?
It can. You know, it's tough for me to get my head around this because of the crime scene, or they didn't treat it as a crime, but the scene, the death scene, of all that was there, and then it just is mind-boggling to me how this could have come down like it did. And I'm taking it, Joe and Donna, that up to this point, as far as governmental agencies go, there were no good guys or friends for you. That you were kind of a thorn in the side of everybody.
I was called on the phone by an OSBI agent, and he told me that my appearance on TV asking for help wasn't making any friends for me. That's the position we were in.
We was up against the prominent people in this county. In a small community like this, it's hard to move forward. We had to move out of Garvin County 10 years later, go to Oklahoma City and find Jay, and then the wheels went to turning.
And that's Jay Mendros, who's the Oklahoma
yes.
attorney, who's Jay. Why did you? I mean, what you had to do was no easy task here. I mean, this
no.
only comes to you, and they say what they want, and you know you have to figure out with the best way if there's a possibility to go forward with something like this.
Right. It ended up being, you know, obviously a lot more difficult and complicated than I ever anticipated, because it seemed very obvious to me, having worked a lot of homicides, what had happened in this case. I mean, they had the evidence. They weren't just a family who said, maybe this happened, or we think, or I had a dream. I mean, they had solid evidence that their daughter was murdered. So what they didn't have was the autopsy. And that's when I recommended that we have an independent pathologist look at the evidence, the same evidence I looked at, and give us a report. So that's what we did. Dr. Bucks out of Colorado looked over everything, and he recommended an exhumation and an autopsy, and he ruled it based on the evidence alone from the statements the police had gathered in the crime scene photographs that it was probably a homicide.
Jay, do you think that the way that the Turners all the way through had preserved so much evidence, gotten so much documentation, that that's what made that first exhumation so easy?
It made a world of difference, because there have been several other families who would have stronger cases if they had access to the law enforcement photographs, if they had preserved the body, that sort of thing. They even had the presence of mind to take pictures at the funeral. I mean, you know, and think about these families. These are people who are devastated, who've unexpectedly lost usually young ones, violent circumstances, and the Turners had the presence of mind to take those pictures. Those pictures of the bruising went a long way.
Talk about the bruising onto the body, because it was really evident. The hands, I mean, photograph by photograph.
She had defensive and offensive bruises on her. I mean, there was a fight. That girl fought to stay alive. And really, as gruesome as the crime scene photos were, where her body was supposedly discovered by this boyfriend, I mean, that was all off, too. The physical evidence, as it was depicted in those pictures, was completely inconsistent with his statement to law enforcement. But apart from that, when the blood was cleaned off of her and you saw her in those funeral photos, that's when you knew that that girl fought. I mean, he didn't even catch her by surprise. She fought to stay alive.
And then, too, like I said, for them to put together step by step everything that had happened and then to come to you with it, was that something that just made your decision easier? Because this was not an easy undertaking. You took on the entire state of Oklahoma with them, but you spearheaded it, is what I'm saying.
Yes. Well, they made it easier for me to get them the help they needed. We had evidence to show experts, and then we got expert reports that backed our position. And with all that, we went to court, and we got a court order to exhume the body and have the one and only autopsy she ever got, at the conclusion of which two doctors ruled the death a homicide. So without the Turners having all this for us to continue building, we wouldn't have gotten as far as we did.
So Dr. Trent was somebody who was released prior to rendering his decision at the last minute. Does this law do anything, Jay, for him at all? Does it do anything for, is vindication, if you will, in this kind of a case, or is it a moot point?
Well, for him, he'll get his vindication at the conclusion of his whistleblower lawsuit. I mean, he still has a lawsuit pending against Oklahoma for wrongful termination and whistleblowing, and I fully believe that he will be successful in that lawsuit. This law, the Shanda Turner Reform Act, allows families to go into court and get these death certificates corrected. In other words, the ME's office can no longer stonewall these families.
So talk about the process then now, what this does, because the governor signed this into law, on the 25th of May?
Yes, and it went through both houses unanimously. It had huge public support. The process is very simple. You take your evidence, and it can't be, just like I said in the beginning, it can't just be a family saying, well, I think this is wrong without any evidence to back it. They need to have some affidavit by an expert saying that we believe that there are mistakes in this death certificate.
Is that the only way? Because we still have other people that are coming to Crime Line and other places to say, you know, we know that our loved one was, it was stamped as suicide. It's in Oklahoma. What can we do? So they have to get, they have to hire an expert to do that for them?
They do need to have an expert. They need to have an affidavit. The statute does not specifically say by an expert, but because there will be an evidentiary hearing based on their pleading, they're going to have to present evidence, some sort of evidence to show why the mistakes were made, or why law enforcement is mistaken and the medical examiner's office is mistaken and how they've ruled it. So, for instance, in the Turner case, we have blood spatter. The blood spatter is consistent with the suspect's story. So we would present a blood spatter expert, and we would present our pathologist, the independent pathologist. And in our case, we would also call Dr. Trant, who was chief medical examiner at the time of the autopsy.
Denny, does this help the families that we've talked to and that you know about that are also waiting for justice, or does this make it more difficult for them? Because they have to do all the work. So for law enforcement, how does that hold for this kind of a situation?
Well, the thing is, a lot of the cases that that we run into, of course, are not all in Oklahoma. We have people all over the country, that the families that find themselves in a similar situation. Oklahoma was really rife with these things. But we have families all over. And you seem to be in a catch-22 with these things. If the medical examiner says, oh, sure, I'd be happy to change the death certificate. However, I need the police to bring me more information. And the police say, well, wait, we're not going to do anything. We're not investigating because the case was already ruled a suicide. It's closed. There is no investigation going on. So we end up with the people have no real venue. It's got to be extremely frustrating when you have nowhere to go. So I think in the case of Oklahoma, where they have a law that if the family is willing and able to get the expert or a credible a witness to submit an affidavit on their behalf, I think it gives them the hope then that they're going to be able to get the death certificate changed, and then hopefully that change will bring the police back in when you now have an unsolved homicide versus a closed suicide. So it does make it, you know, it makes it difficult. It places the onus on the family. But at least there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that if they can come up with the information, that something will be done about it.
That's right. And one thing that I would like to point out is that the onus is always on the family once these things are ruled this way. Whether, you know, and I'm just being blunt about it, once law enforcement says this is what we think and the ME's office rubber stamps it, they quit listening. They quit listening to the families. So it is up to the families to say, no, wait, look, I hired a private investigator with 20 years homicide experience, or we had an independent pathologist look at this, and you guys are wrong. You missed this, 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 and this.
So that's what the law does.
Yes, before this law passed, we did all of this because it was up to the family to show them why we believed that they were wrong or they missed crucial evidence, and they refused to consider it. And we had no way to make them. We had no way to make them correct obviously wrong determinations because nobody was over them until this law passed.
Okay,
so all the families. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask Jay what she recommends to our listeners and families who don't live in Oklahoma now and don't have this new law working for them or available to them. Because, like I say, we get these families from all over the country that find themselves in these very similar situations, and they're just they can't seem, you know, it's like shoveling sand on the beach. No matter how much they do, they can't do anything. They don't end up with results. And the effort that was made in Oklahoma, is that something people could start in other states?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it was a group effort, and it took the Turners going public and other families coming forward and our whole Justice for the Dead website that highlighted case after case after case, and a petition drive with over 6,000 signatures on petition demanding reform. anybody can do this, but it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of time, and it was a creative solution. I mean, when we literally tried every single avenue that was there, we went to the ME's office, we went to administrative court, we went to district court, and we got the door slammed in our faces everywhere we went. And so what do you do when the law doesn't provide a remedy? Well, we created one. We just changed the law.
Can I step in here?
Yeah, sure, Joe.
The most, and this is my opinion, the most important thing to these families is don't give up. If you know your loved one has been murdered or something's wrong on his death certificate, don't give up. Now, that's the, they will try everything. I mean, they've slammed the door in our face for 10 years. And these families are going to have to get them an attorney that believes in their cause and will help them. Now, anybody in any state, I mean, you can ask Jay or Donna, we got the best reception at the Oklahoma State Capitol. I mean, me and Donna and Jay, we went up there and done it. And our bill got passed 100%. We never had a no vote on the floor, the Senate, or in any committee. But we had the evidence.
Wasn't it also because you guys had all set the groundwork, NPR? You had done a lot before you had gotten there.
Yes.
People were very
yes.
familiar. Every time you turned around, Fox and, you know, News 9,
yes.
they were all covering what you all did, and people were familiar with who you now were. Didn't that have a
right.
lot? Wasn't that? I thought it was instrumental, Jay, and Donna
that
and Joe.
We lifted the
Jay
veil of
created
secret.
Justice for the Dead. That helped us a bunch. All these other families coming in, Jay got his website set up, and all these other families. Now, shut up, Jay, and let you go.
No, all I was going to say is they got away with this, they being the medical examiner's office, because of secrecy and isolation. They kicked grieving families when they were down, and they made sure they thought they were the only family in that position, that they were bucking authority and that they were just crazy or they couldn't accept the truth. Well, when all these families, when the Turners went public and the families started coming forward, they banded together, and then it became very clear that there was actually a problem. It wasn't just one family that was a squeaky wheel. It was a statewide problem. So it was lifting that veil of secrecy that the ME's office was hiding behind.
And for somebody like
you. Bad families have really helped us.
That's right. Ashley Dawn Thompson, who was found dead on January 1st, 2004, this guy was a former chief of police, the father.
Mm-hmm.
And so many things that happened, and he's been so instrumental as well. Do you think that he retired, Jay, Mr. Thompson, for the force?
I believe he's still there.
Okay.
I think so.
I think that, too, with the families, because you have a lot of families on the Justice of the Dead site that would not be able to afford anything, perhaps because he's become, sadly, such an expert in this after his own daughter was murdered,
yeah.
that he could participate.
Justice for the Dead was a pro bono effort. It was to give a voice to these families who had been silenced.
That's
so
right.
That was... Anybody, well, we screened them. I mean, we only put families on there where there was evidence to support their claims
okay.
and who had, you know, cases that were credible. So there was a screening process, but we wanted to give a voice to families who couldn't afford the entire legal battle that the Turners undertook, but we wanted to give them a way to change their death certificates as well, and this law does that.
So wouldn't it be nice to be able to go in all at once and take all the families and just get it done and let them all have hearings? Is that something that could be accomplished?
Well, it's not every case would have to rise and fall on its own merit, you know, I mean, and they all have different issues. Some of them are tox issues. Some of them don't even involve homicide. Some of them are medical malpractice with overprescribing prescription medication. So each case has to be handled individually. And there's a burden of proof that's on the petitioner, you know, and that's the way court works. So,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
But
no,
okay. I just wanted to ask. I've been thinking about this in this decade long battle Joe and Donna had to go through here to finally get an autopsy. How do you handle that? In other words, 10 years of having doors slammed in your faces over and over and over and over. First of all, how did you maintain the stamina to keep this thing going, to keep in the fight? And secondly, which is, thank God I haven't been in that situation, so I can only speculate. But I would be more inclined to think if I were in there, it wouldn't be so much that I would give up, but that I would probably end up in the slammer myself, because I would end up going into one of these governmental offices who was giving me the runaround and refusing to deal with me and refusing to do the right thing, and I would probably want to go and grab somebody by the neck. I mean, did you ever get to that point? I just can't imagine.
Answer that. He's a bull rider.
Joe?
Well, Jenny, you have to take your life into consideration. I had Donna. I've got grandkids. I've got my son. Got my daughter-in-law. My mother. I mean, we was all, you know, I still had my family. Yes, I lost my daughter. And yes, there was, you have to fight anger. You have to control your anger. But I was always looking ahead, you know. Me and Donna kind of, we never put it on the back burner, but we kind of got our lives, got our finances in order. We worked toward this for 9 years. Then, I don't know, a light switch turned on or something. It just kind of dawned on us, you know. We got to get an attorney. We got to get back working on this. The timing was right. And you have to fight your anger, Denny. I mean, because Lord knows. Now, me and Donna, we was never suicidal, but now I'm not saying we wasn't homicidal part of the time, you know. But it was, it's been a very stressful decade. I'll put it that way. And I know Donna's very proud of me, and I'm very, very proud of her for not losing her cool and going up and causing a scene, because all that would have done was hurt us. We had to keep our dignity all the way through this. And Jay, close your ears. It was a blessing that we found Jay Mingo at the end of the
tunnel. I know she hates that.
And I didn't say
it's
that,
true. Jay. No. Why don't we bring on the other family as well? On October 28th, 2009, 27-year-old Katrina Rivera Hill died in a small town tunnel in Grandy County, Oklahoma, after spending 9 days in a coma. Katrina had supposedly intentionally jumped from a moving vehicle, causing her own fatal injuries. This information was provided by police by the only witness to the incident. He was the driver of the car and Katrina's ex-boyfriend, who had a history of domestic violence against her. The Tuttle police took his word on October 19th. Katrina was in a suicidal state, jumped from the moving car, and then they forwarded that report to the medical examiner's office, where without further investigation, Katrina's death was ruled a suicide. And they were in the same boat as all these other families that are on justiceforthedead.com. So with us are Sam and Michelle. Welcome both of you to the show. I mean, you have also tremendously, both of you worked very hard to get this passed.
Thank you, Susan. Yes, we were very fortunate to meet Jay and the Justice of the Family Dead families also.
And Michelle, in doing this, I mean, in knowing that something happened to her other than what was said, and piecing this together, October 28th, 2009, the work that you've had to put together, she dies during Domestic Violence Awareness Month, actually. Has it been difficult to get investigators to pay attention to this case, that it was not a suicide, she did not just jump out of the car?
Yeah. Well, we went ahead and have an investigator looking into the case, but again, as it's written, they took the word of the boyfriend on this, and that's what kind of set us back the most. Kind of at the beginning, no pictures were taken. Initial police officers didn't do any interviewing. So we've been fighting from the beginning of everything that took place, and we continue to fight.
And then Jay, for you. Go ahead, Michelle.
Sorry. We knew something was wrong the first, as soon as we got the call and we showed up at the hospital that same night. We knew that something had desperately gone wrong, and we immediately called the police. And they never pursued it in looking into any kind of details until later on, which has been devastating to our case.
And Jay, like you said earlier, you had screened every one of these families before putting them on the site to go forward. And you know, in this case as well, you had to really look at everything. And from what they provided to you, was it to you something that was pretty easy to look at, that as far as what you read, that she was, this was not a suicide, this was actually a murder or a homicide?
Absolutely. I mean, this is another very obvious case. The Tuttle police, the initial police officer who responded, did not question the boyfriend. He had no idea of the history of domestic violence between the two of them, including a VPO that she had taken out against him. He didn't know that the boyfriend had kidnapped her previously, and when she jumped out of this vehicle, he was driving her to the house he had kidnapped her in. The initial responding officer dropped the ball. Well, he passed that ball to the medical examiner's office, who just rubber stamped it suicide without an autopsy. OHP picked it up, and they continued investigating, and after a 300-page report, ruled it a homicide, that it was a negligent homicide at the very least. That trooper tried to convince the medical examiner's office to change the death certificate, and she refused. Dr. Yacoub refused to do that.
Is it because of lack of training? Is it because of ignorance? Is it because they don't care? Because I don't understand why no autopsy is ordered in the majority of these cases that you represented to get this Reform Act passed.
It's offensive, and it's absolutely ridiculous that they even have the nerve to tell a family you can't accept the truth when they haven't done the basic work it takes to get to the truth. You can't tell a family you can't accept the truth when you haven't done an autopsy to tell them what the truth is. What they've gotten away with and what they've done to these families is unconscionable.
And throughout the whole state, Jenny, we see this. In Oklahoma, I remember it was almost a year ago that we started having the families on, and one right after the other. And it was, for those listening, it was partly because we'd gotten phone calls, but Denny, you had written a book on Medical Examiner, a book based on a case you had seen firsthand.
Yeah. And I hadn't realized, and that was some differences in my case, but I had thought up until that point pretty much when there was a death and the deceased went to an ME's office or a funeral home, that everything was above board. And my eyes were really opened when I got into this particular case I investigated. And then to hear these horrors, I call them horror stories, out of Oklahoma. And I agree with Jay. I can't comprehend how an investigator, a cop, a guy with a badge and the uniform, can go to some of these scenes that we're hearing about and come away without at least a suspicion that maybe there was something wrong here. Maybe it requires more investigation. If that person is a rookie or what have you, or has never handled a death case before, maybe they should contact their supervisor or that, you know,
but
and say, hey,
ego.
I need some help,
you know,
with this.
In all these cases, there's bruised egos. There is, you know, a case right now similar, not to throwing out the window, but similar to this right now. The death certificate was just changed from suicide to undetermined. Now, after jumping up and down and creating a big ruckus, all of a sudden, they're moving forward. And they look like they might be coming to some conclusion, at least to investigate the case, when they didn't do the proper investigation to begin with. And I think, in my opinion, and Jay, tell me if I'm wrong, that in so many of these intimate partner homicide cases, because that's what they are, that the investigation is little to non-existent.
Yeah, that's definitely the trend I've seen. Yeah.
And so families, if they can't afford a lawyer to do this, if they at least, and this is what we always say, is to start putting together as much documentation as possible. You know, start talking to witnesses, start talking to people. You know, it's not about taking matters into your own hands, but gather the information immediately. You know, you've got Citizens Against Homicide, who's a crime lawyer consultant here, that would be happy to help and contact us. Because everybody's not going to be Oklahoma. Everybody's not going to be able to be the Turners and come to you and say, this is what we want to do. We're not going to be able to come like Sam and Michelle have or all the other families. Boo Edwards, Sheila DeVinny. That, to me, that was one of the first ones that set me off, besides the Turner case, immediately because of the pattern in the trailer, how this all happened, what this person was allowed to do. And just how, in all of these cases, these families have to fight for the truth. And in the one case I was talking about earlier on the intimate partner, it's egos. That once a determination seems to be made by a local law enforcement, they refuse to call another county in, and their egos are bruised. They did make mistakes, and they're refusing. So there are some very bold medical examiners now who will say, a lot of them are private, but they will say it's egos. They didn't know what to do on the crime scene. So in taking this the way that you have and going through for the Turners and the Edwards and the DeVinnies and the Hortons and everybody that I just can't mention because it's too many of you all, is this going to streamline then for the state of Oklahoma? Is your practice going to go into just this? Because this is all you're going to be doing because of this law. I mean, are you getting bombarded? Are you getting people coming to you and saying, what's the best way to do this? How do we do this? Is there a way you could put this in some kind of a format, perhaps, for other families?
Yes, and I mean, that's another thing. You know, families don't have to come to me. The law is in place. Any attorney can file the petition. It's spelled out very clearly in the statute how to do that. Families can file one pro se. They don't necessarily need a lawyer, although, you know, they would have to follow the rules of evidence at the evidentiary hearing. We did the best we could to get them, at least get them a venue, because we didn't have one. There just wasn't one. So, I mean, but one thing that I did think of when you were talking about these domestic violence homicides that I think would be very helpful for families, if you know somebody who's in a relationship like that, keep documentation. Because a lot of these domestic violence perpetrators are very charming, they're sociopathic, and that's why when law enforcement shows up, they get snowed. You know, that there's this seemingly good man devastated by the discovery of his deceased girlfriend or wife. Take notes, take documentation, and be upfront and give it to law enforcement right out of the gate and just tell them, no, this man is bad and here's why.
Jay, you bring up a very interesting point and something that that we have talked about and Susan has worked on in the past, actually, called the evidentiary abuse affidavit. And that basically provides for the threatened domestic partner, generally a woman, to record and document ahead of time that if something happens to her, here's who the police ought to take a look at and identify the individual by as much information as possible and the various threats that have been made and so on and so forth so that the law enforcement people, if something does happen to the affiant, is they don't get snowed by some guy with a charming personality who can just, you know, feign tremendous grief and so forth, and actually take a hard look at this individual, you know. And it, I think that's an excellent idea. I don't know what your thoughts are, but I think you're agreeing.
Oh yeah, I think that would be a great idea. Getting somebody who's in that relationship to fill one out. I don't know, you know, how many people would actually do that because there's a whole cycle to it. You know, Susan is well aware of.
They do it. They're doing it in droves actually now. It's going to be used tomorrow, Friday in a court in Virginia because she did it a few months before, and she couldn't call police, couldn't do certain things, and that's going to be used in the testimony for her to hopefully get a plenary or a 2-year order of protection because of what we, but how we document it. But yet, when they don't have a choice, and how many of these cases are we seeing, like the Turners, like the Vinnies, you know, like Rivera Hill, like Ashley Thompson? How many of these are we seeing in all these cases where if they had been able to do this, we wouldn't be talking about it? And that's what's so important about it, and that's what's so important. Yes, and you're right. Sometimes it's very difficult to get them to understand, but if it becomes an accepted practice in the counties across the country, then it's something that will be done. And Georgetown University is taking this on as a study, as well as one of the universities, Carolina Coastal, will be teaching this starting in January, because it goes to the prescription of this, but it goes to the education and the mindset. And I hope that too, with the justiceofthedead.com site, that what you all do is afterwards too, is you have a place, just because if you take all the family's experiences and what they learned, because they were all different, even Jay, even what you learned in doing this,
right,
and put down, you know, some sort of a synopsis of, you know, A through Z, this is how you start, this is what you do, their experiences, because this was groundbreaking. The Turners live with this for so many years. They have a back room with their daughter's life, you know, in the back, in documentation, that they had to constantly go back and forth to, and so did these other families. That's horrific, to try to get justice.
Yeah, it is.
And you've already set up this great site. Go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to ask, certainly this, as Jay called it, a venue for these families to start getting the justice. But once a death certificate is changed, I'd like to ask this from Michelle and Sam and Joe and Donna. With the law passed, have you had any interaction since then with the police agencies? I'm just wondering how the police agencies are reacting to what they thought was a closed case and out of their hair, suddenly to be back on the table. Are you suspecting that there will be a legitimate investigation now that things are different?
Can I answer that?
Yes.
Oh, as far as Joe and I are concerned, we feel positive that there will be. There's already, we're receiving, you know, some help, and we're expecting more.
gives us a lot of hope.
Well,
and
sure.
We know that it will definitely lead to positiveness at the end, so we just keep praying and everything will come the way it's supposed to.
And there's a new sheriff, I understand, since the last election?
In Garvin County, we have a new sheriff. And
That was amazing.
That was amazing. This whole ordeal has been amazing. God has cleared the path. And so, yes, we're very hopeful and optimistic. He has helped, and we'll do what we can to help him.
Yeah, you know,
but we've got to get the death certificate saying homicide first before they can come back in.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
and that
how
will
long
happen.
A process will that be?
In our case, I'll let Jay answer that. I think it's pretty easy, but I'm not no lawyer.
It shouldn't be once it's filed, we'll get that hearing, and then it shouldn't be but a few months for the judge to make their determination.
And then what happens
when the judge doesn't make the determination, hypothetically, and I'm not talking about in the Turner's case, but in any one of these other families, is there a next process for this step in the new law?
Well, anytime you get your foot in the door in court, then if the families are unsuccessful at district court, we could continue on in the appeals process. So if
errors were made in the evidentiary hearing, if things were excluded that should have been admitted, that sort of thing, that's all subject to an appeal. So possibly it could get sent back for a further evidentiary hearing or different findings.
Is it possible, Jay, that when the hearings, for the various families who are presenting evidence to get the changes on the death certificate, is it possible that if for evidence to be introduced, and not solely, let's say, an autopsy from an independent pathologist, but if the case itself and the would you be able to introduce anybody the mishandling of the case? For example, the stuff that just doesn't pass the smell test from the police investigation, can that get in to show how the thing was mishandled?
Absolutely, because that's relevant to the initial determination that was made. Yeah, and I suspect that most of these families will be putting on a lot of that evidence, that it was mishandled in this way, which led to this wrong conclusion. And when you have somebody with more experience or with any experience looking at this evidence, this is the reasonable conclusion that one would come to. And the burden of proof is by preponderance of the evidence. So it's the same burden for a search warrant or an arrest warrant. It's just, is it more probable than not that this was a homicide or an accident as opposed to a suicide?
So this isn't a beyond a reasonable doubt situation. It's just the
preponderance. No. No.
Let me ask you this, too, and for anybody who wants to chime in. If our listeners from out of Oklahoma who are found themselves in similar situations, if they wanted to try to get this venue in their state, obviously there's strength in numbers, but what would be the first step? How would you start? Would you check first, get a lawyer? Would you go to politicians? What? Put up a website. Because I agree. I think you said early on in the program, Jay, that a lot of this is people are made to think they're the only ones that are having these issues. And you've got to get, I think, unity and show that you're not the only one, that these types of things are happening to other families. So what would be the first step that people should take if they wanted to try to explore the possibility of getting some type of an Oklahoma resolution?
I think the first step is to go public. And then when one family goes public, the rest will come forward and then join together, band together. And we started a petition drive that resulted in families from all across the state talking to more families. That resulted in families we didn't even know about calling their legislators. So a year later, when we were at the Capitol trying to talk to the legislators, they said, all of them would say, well, we've gotten calls from our constituents on this issue. So they've got to band together. They've got to go public and stop the secrecy.
I think it might be a conference. You know, this sounds crazy, but maybe, Denny, we could talk to, you know, Gene from Cervantes and a couple of the other people. I don't see why we couldn't put on a conference. You know, what all these families have been through is a great learning tool, and do things about putting together experts and different people at the conference where they could learn and then take it away and actually not duplicate but do it for their own cases. They would come away with knowledge that perhaps they wouldn't have. And maybe that's something to think about, again, because of what, you know, is or isn't being done, and make it a big thing. Take, you know, Michelle and take maybe Joe, Donna doesn't like to talk, and take Jay and some other people and that have done this process. Also, at a conference like this, in my opinion, there needs to be a faith-based kind of a togetherness, because I think that in all of these families, they have stuck together. And in a lot of these cases where there's unsolved crimes, we don't see that. And we see families ripped and torn apart. And then what do they have to do for the faith, to keep their faith, to keep going forward when they don't feel that they can anymore? So it could be a number of things that can be taught. Like I said, in a lot of the intimate partner crimes, there's so many things that even when I go across the country and teach, there's so many things that the prosecutors and the law enforcement never thought of. And when people don't realize, too, that if you're involved in a domestic violence or a stalking situation, that when they go for services or they go to the police for an order of protection or to get help or to get a report, they are leaving a crime scene. Every victim leaves a crime scene to go for help somewhere. We don't see it that way. So in all these cases, because they're so difficult sometimes to prove, because both parties live there or they're in a relationship, but again, to have this kind of a conference for this, because again, it would be a pass on the torch of what other people could do. I think it would be very successful. And I think, again, we should talk to Gene Cervantes or some other folks that I know I could talk to one of the universities that I'm associated with now that would probably welcome doing something like this.
And, well,
because
it's
needed. There's too many of these cases across the country.
We just got a message in the chat room from Citizens Against Homicide that they are in, and let's do it.
That's why I said it. So see? That's good.
But, you know, that's very true. I think, too, if we could get this effort going and build up some momentum, we would probably get some people willing to donate some time and do some pro bono stuff to help people with different expertise. And that's got to be the thing, because, Susan, how many cases do we see outside of Oklahoma that are in this boat and the people
well,
are just
you got Donna Underwood right now,
call.
Daniel Underwood right now. You know, the police made a mistake. You've got Sheena Morris right now. The police are just eating their underwear at the fact that they're cringing. And I would also suggest on Thursday, for people that are listening, Dr. Berkland is going to be on my show Time's Up. He's a pathologist. He's an investigator. He does these kind of cases. And he doesn't cost $10,000 like perhaps Dr. Bodden would. And he's minimal in what he charges. But what he does is groundbreaking. And I think that, you know, the resources and the things that can be done, I think that also we CrimeWire needs to, I don't think that we have justicefortheDead.com up on our site. If we don't, we need to get it up there where people really, where it's got to be a little bit more prominent for people to see it's been so successful.
Jay, if we do get something going, since you've done it, you've been there, done that, as they say, would you be willing to consult or do help out or whatever you can to try to get other people on the right track?
Sure. I mean, this was eye-opening for me. You know, I really had no idea that so many families were struggling like this, and it's the flip side of criminal defense. I mean, we just look for the errors, but the big difference is when you're doing criminal defense, you get your day in court. And these families never got a day in court. And, I mean, it's just what happened to them in Oklahoma should not happen to anybody. So the fact that we got this in place and these families can go get these death certificates corrected is a big victory for them. Unfortunately, a lot of these cases go cold in the meantime, you know, and that's a reality too. But there is no statute of limitations on murder. So once these death certificates are corrected, if new evidence comes up, if incriminating statements are made, these families can still get a prosecution.
Light at the end of the tunnel and hope.
Yes, absolutely. But when those certificates read suicide, that door is closed. That there's no light at the end of that tunnel. So it's definitely a step-by-step process, and it's painful and time-consuming. But, I mean, God bless these families. They've become my heroes. I've just never seen people with this much perseverance and tenacity. They amaze me because, like you, Denny, I think, my God, if this had happened to my child, I'd be behind bars.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what? We are out of time, and I want to thank all of you. And we will do this again and keep updated, and we will pursue the idea of a conference. And if anybody's listening, please go to justicefortheDead.com. What you've all done has been nothing short of amazing, and I'm proud to know most of you. And I just think, you know, you're a role model for the country. Thank you to the CrimeWire team, Director of Research Kim Colton, and Public Relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be Tuesday, June 14th, 2011. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes, and interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Crime Wire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guests. If you would like your case to be featured on Crime Wire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. You can hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show at www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play. And remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the Crime Wire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, Tom Shamshak, and Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you and good night. Good night, everyone.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Bye.